Perfect. I think I'll just get started. If anyone else joins, we're yeah, let them join. Okay. Yeah. So this is Profit First for Personal Finance. I don't know if any of you guys in the room are familiar with the concept of Profit First. I'll kind of cover some of the basics, just kind of bring you up to speed. Yeah, most people watching this will know who I am. So I'm Stephen Edwards. I run CTA Accountants. We're an accounting firm with over a dozen team members, looking after sort of small businesses, individuals, and we focus on helping people sort of grow their business and take away some of the pain and the stress away from the back office. But in recent years, specifically the last 2 or 3 years, we've put a lot of our focus and our energy on Profit First, because it's a way of kind of helping people manage their business in a more sustainable way, kind of increasing their margins and also managing their cash with less stress. And that's why the Profit First Club is here. It's where it was born. So we've been going since October. We do have a Notion page. I will send some links to everybody on the database following this session, and you can access previous webinars. There's some nice little resources. There's the first 5 chapters of Profit First and some kind of, yeah, useful tips on there as well. And quite simply, apart from sharing all of the content, we just go live once a month. We do recordings, as building a nice sort of library of resources for people. So just a bit of a recap on what Profit First is. Because I am guilty of kind of assuming everybody knows what it is, because it's one of our passions at CTA nowadays. But it's based off a famous book by Mike Michalowicz. He's in America. It's a bestseller, so thousands and thousands across the world now. And really, the kind of summary of it is that, you know, turnover is vanity, profit is sanity for most business owners. Obviously, there's some exceptions with people trying to scale a business or exit and all those sort of things. But for most businesses, and it's mainly around businesses, but we are adopting it to personal finance today, so we'll get into that. But for most businesses, they focus on their turnover, and as long as that's growing, they think all their problems are going to go away. But there's multi-million pound businesses that make a loss and they struggle with their cash. So it doesn't necessarily solve all your problems, but particularly for smaller businesses, if we can reverse engineer so that instead of sales minus expenses equals profit, what we want to do is say sales minus the profit we should be earning in our business, as a business owner or as an entity that's sustainable and profitable, gives us what we've got left to afford essentially for our expenses. So it goes against traditional accounting rules saying profit is last. We're saying profit is first. So, you know, what comes first does matter. You know, people don't say, I'm going to put my health last, you know, I'm going to put my family last. And it's kind of the same with profitability. There's a lot of human psychology in Profit First. The main thing it's based on is Parkinson's law. So there's a few bullet points there that talks about time. I'm sure everybody watching this on the recording, and you guys, Beatrice and Nick here, live, that you've been in a situation where the lack of time has kind of focused your mind to get something done. You know, when you've got less time, when there's a scarcity around time, we tend to take action. It sharpens our mind. You know, the example that comes to mind is studying exams. You know, a lot of people just do all-nighters, a lot of students, when it gets close to the final exams. And that's kind of human nature. And there's been some studies in Germany, I think maybe Sweden, where they've done less working hours in a week, and they've actually got more work done with less hours in the working week. So there's quite a lot of around this human psychology element. I've got a picture of food there, an all-you-can-eat buffet restaurant. And in my experience, when you've got so much food around you tend to eat more because you know it's not going to run out. If you go to a Michelin star restaurant or a finer dining restaurant, you will eat a smaller plate and you will still be satisfied. So we kind of the logic behind this is the demand meets the supply in many ways. So the more that's available, the more we feel we can consume. And if we apply this to money, if we apply it to finances, we apply it to business, it's probably, you know, a lot of people, the more money they earn, the more money they spend because they've got a bigger supply, so they're going to demand more of the money. They don't adjust, you know, their lifestyle adjusts to suit the new normal of the supply of money they have. So the principle with profit first is, can we create pots, or can we create smaller plates? Can we, you know, give ourselves the portion size we need to kind of not to su survive, but to you know, that satisfies our needs, rather than overindulging and consuming more than what we need. And if we apply it to money, quite simply, if you've got all your money in one place, if you've got all your money in one pot, so, you know, let's pretend if we apply it to personal finances, let's pretend somebody's got £2,500 a month, you know, available in their bank account. If they see all of that in one space, the chances are you're probably going to spend all of that money if it's all in one account. If you were to put £500 away in a rainy day fund, you're left with £2,000, and you're probably going to spend the £2,000 and forget about the £500. So that's the kind of idea with Parkinson's Law, but we will dive into this in a bit more detail. Right, so a lot of people kind of use the profit first system in their personal lives already. You know, if you're the sort of person who puts something aside for Christmas, if you put something aside for holidays, if you have any kind of mini pot or little partitioning when it comes to your money, you're kind of doing profit first already. I'm just gonna put it out to the room. So Nick and Beatrice, I don't know if any of you guys have any sort of pots for your holidays, for your Christmas, or if you do anything like that. No, not Beatrice. Shaking her head from Beatrice. How about you, Nick?
I have a pot that goes immediately into school fees, and then I've got another pot that goes immediately into a mortgage, and then another pot that goes into something else. I think that listen, I'm joking, but I think there's a time of life, isn't there, when pots can be of different sizes, and I totally get the point. And I think that I think it just depends on the time of life. I wish I had more pots available at the moment to fill with these extra pounds, but I get the principle, I'm hoping one day that there will be larger pots, no doubt about it.
Brilliant, thank you. Well, what I can say is, by thinking about it, you're far more likely to have larger pots. You know, that's the first step in any process, is just making it front of mind, really. So, you know, in my team, a couple of the team members, they have a Christmas club, so they put some money aside. That is a form of profit first, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to introduce this to from a personal finance perspective, because it was born for businesses, but humans are humans, and it's the same principle. You know, we don't, when we've been employed, you know, a lot of people watching this video might be self-employed or run their own limited company, but when people have been employed, you don't pay that much attention to the tax that gets taken away on your payslip. You know, it's probably quite annoying initially because you look at it and think, oh my God, am I really paying that much in tax and NI? But actually, you get used to the amount that hits your bank. So effectively, that's a form of a pot. You know, that's a tax pot, but you don't get any choice. So what we're looking to do is be proactive with that same type of system, but, you know, force our own kind of pot system on what's important to us in our lives, not just to kind of pay the tax man. Okay, so I'm just going to go back a little bit. So sorry to pick on you two guys, because you're the only two live today, but has any of you heard or read The Richest Man in Babylon? No, that's a no from
Heard of
Beatrice.
it, never read it.
Okay. I would recommend reading it. Anybody who is watching this, I read it for the first time about 5 years ago, and I will say it's the book. I mean, Profit First has been huge. You know, it's aimed at business owners, but the psychology applies to anyone. But this is probably, along with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is quite well known for a lot of people if you're into reading, Rich Dad, Poor Dad and The Richest Man in Babylon are the two most famous books when it comes to managing your money and money mindset. So, you know, I won't spoil the book for you, but the gist of it is that Babylon was a very wealthy place. And there was a guy, let's just call him the richest man in Babylon. And he had most of the wealth in the area. He had properties. He had all the luxuries you sort of needed. And there were people similar ages that kind of questioned, how could he be so rich? And he agreed to get everybody together and explain his system, his logic, how he's built up so much wealth. So everybody showed up in the evening and he kind of pointed everybody out. And there was some really, credible people in terms of their professions, kind of, architects, tradesmen, jewelry makers, all these sort of wow established people, but they didn't really have much wealth. And he said, look at you, you've all got the finest clothes, you know, you spend all your money furnishing your houses, you do all these luxuries in terms of your time, you don't go short, but he said your purses are empty, you know, there's no money in your purses. And he said, what's happening is you're paying everybody else. You're paying, you know, if we apply this to modern day principles, you're paying the electricity supplier, the gas supplier, you're paying your gym membership, you know, you're paying your mortgage. Obviously, there's an element we haven't got any choice. If you're paying your mortgage, you know, you're probably going out for meals out and paying people that own the restaurants. You're paying all these people and you're not really left with anything at the end. So basically, you're not keeping any of your money. And he said, rule number one, and there's loads of rules, and they apply to modern day money. It's quite scary, actually, how much it applies. But he says, rule number one, and this is the biggest takeaway, is a tenth of what you earn should be yours to keep forever. He says, give yourself permission to say a tenth of what you earn is always your money. You're not going to give that away to anyone else. And it was just quite, the book will explain it better, you know, because there's a reason why it's so popular. But it's just quite a powerful, basically, there's nothing new there. It's saying you should save. You should save 10%. We kind of all know that. But emotionally, it's kind of something humans are really good at prioritizing today, putting off tomorrow. So we don't really think about it. And I'm going to give some examples of how powerful the concept can be later on. But that's the gist of it. So really, the profit first system in my eyes is creating pots, but creating pots that can serve your lifestyle, but also creating pots that are going to serve you in the future is really one of the things we're trying to encourage people to do here. So just really expanding, building on the concept of the richest man in Babylon. If we flip profit first, so profit first for business is pay your profit first. The money comes in, the revenue comes in, the turnover comes in, and in personal finance, the money hits your personal account. So whatever you decide to pay yourself from your business or if you're employed, that's your money. And what we're saying is most people say, we've used the profit first principles, most people say, right, what are my bills? You know, what are my bills? What do I need to pay? I need to pay my mortgage. I need to pay my car. You know, my car lease, or I need to pay my gym membership, you know, I need to pay my Sky bill, I need to pay all these different things. And what's left is for me. So what we want to do is we want to flip that. That's the whole idea of applying profit first to your personal finances, is what money do you really need or want to A, live the lifestyle that you want, and B, think about your money future. Because really, we've got money now, and we've got money future. So what we want to do is we want to make sure, first and foremost, can we move towards this 10% of what you earn is yours to keep? So what we would encourage, and I don't, you know, say to people, you should just put 10% away straight away if you're not used to doing that. That's definitely not the approach I would say. But can we move closer towards that principle of actually, this money is mine to keep forever? I'm not just going to spend it on, you know, stuff I have to. I'm going to put that aside for my future. And that's what we want to encourage with pay yourself first, pay your mortgage last. And So, you know, money for the future would be first and foremost. But then, you know, what do you want to do? Is, you know, I've come across something called your terms. So your terms is really what do you want out of your life in terms of, so it's an acronym, the time you want to put in. So how many hours do you want to work in, you know, to earn the income you want? You know, do you want to not work Fridays? Do you want to work 5 hours a day, 50 hours a week? You know, so many months a year. So what time do you want to put in? That's the T in terms. The E stands for the energy. You know, what's the energy you want to commit to the work and week to week, month to month. R is the resources. What resources? So a lot of this applies to business owners, but you can kind of think about it from your personal finances as well. M stands for the money, and S stands for the sanity. And really, with your terms, you should end up with a number of how many hours I want to work, and how much money do I need to live my life on my terms. And you know, it's quite handy, Nick, that you're here because you're in the luxury holiday market. But for a lot of people, when they think of their terms, it will be, oh, I need to earn X amount of money. But actually, what we want to do is we want to reverse engineer. Why do we need that amount of money? So what I would encourage people to do, and actually I might put a template together because we have got this, is your ideal lifestyle tracker. And really what you want to do is list out what you need to live your ideal lifestyle. You know, what do you need to pay per annum or per month for the ideal house? So what do you need to pay for your mortgage? What do you need to pay for, you know, the disposable income you need if you want weekends away? Meals out so many times a month, or whatever it means to you. How many holidays do you want? I was going to go back to, which is quite a big thing for a lot of people. And holiday doesn't necessarily need to be a luxury holiday. It could be, you know, a week away from your house. So what the reason I'm talking about all of this is if you've got your terms and you know what's important in your life, what we want to do with your personal income is we want to make sure what you're receiving, you're working towards that. You know, because if you lose sight of what you want to achieve from a lifestyle perspective, the money's going to come in, the money's going to go out. But if we've got this plan in terms of what our ideal life looks like now and in the future, we can make sure we're kind of creating these pots, or we can partition money to serve our lifestyle now and in the future. So getting into some of the more practicalities of this. So really, I'm not going to overcomplicate it and introduce too many tactical sort of tactics and ideas and tips. I am going to drip feed this over the sort of coming months. But quite simply, can you start partitioning pots of money? So you could create different bank accounts. So a lot of people got more than one bank account. So if you know, let's say you've got £2,000 that comes in every month, if you know, a starting point, if you wanted to put 1% aside for savings, that would be £20. Because I'm not suggesting anybody who watches this recording starts at 10% if you're not used to saving money. And you know, there's quite a lot of people not necessarily used to putting money aside. It's a bit like going to the gym. If you don't go to the gym, it's really hard to say go to the gym 5 times a week. You know, that's not really sustainable for a lot of people. What I'm more interested in is helping people build a new habit. So it's the habit that counts. And you need to do a habit for at least 21 days. They say it takes 21 days for it to become a habit. I think it's around 66 days for it to be who you are. It's, you know, it's beyond a habit. It's just subconsciously something you'll always do. So I'd say, right, can I, for the first, you know, month or 21. Well, the problem is you get paid once a month, so you might need to do it for 21 months for that to be a habit. But can I, for the short term, just get used to putting some money aside that I don't put aside at the moment? So 1% if you're starting from zero, and that's exactly how I coach Profit First clients. If you know any business owners watching this, when we work with our Profit First clients, some people don't put aside their tax money. You know, it sounds quite crazy. You know, a lot of people be thinking, oh my God, I could not live if I didn't put any money aside for tax. But the truth is, some people worry about it later on, you know, when the time comes. And for somebody who's not used to putting anything aside for tax, there's no point telling them to put 20% aside starting next week. because it's not going to work. It, you know, it's too much of a strain. It's a shock to the system. However, what I can do, and what I do encourage people to do, is put 1% aside for tax, because there's no excuses. There's literally no excuses not to put 1% aside. And what we do is we compound that. So we might do 1% for quarter one. We might move to 4% for quarter two. And we sort of move that up so that person is in the habit of putting money aside for tax. And I would say the same with your savings. Start with 1%. If you're already doing 1%, 2%, 3%, can you just notch it up a little bit? So I'm talking not about savings, because you know, it's quite important for the future, but it's not very exciting for the here and now. I would encourage people to use this system to benefit you now. So if you're not used to putting money aside for holidays, create a pot, call it the holiday pot. I want to go to Florida next summer, so 2025. I'm far more likely to make that happen. A, if I decide that's what I want to do. All starts with a decision, so you need to make that decision. B, if I book something, and actually a lot of the entrepreneurial organizations I'm in encourage business owners to book something, even if they don't even think they can afford it. Because what you're doing is you're planting the seed, you know, and that's going to grow into something. And then create the pot and start putting money aside. You're far more likely to go on that holiday if you do that, compared to saying, I hope to go on holiday next year. I'm not going to create a pot, but I'm hoping I'm going to have the money later on. You know, if you're watching this and you haven't got the money now, what I'd encourage you to do is start a pot for that holiday you want to go on next year. If this is relevant, it rings true for you. It could be something else. It could be a big occasion or whatever it means to you. But let's use an example of a holiday. And just put something aside. You know, if you can only afford to put 20 quid aside, start with 20 quid, 50 quid, £100, whatever it means to you. So with Profit First for businesses, we move towards 5 or 6 pots. And the reason I've got Monzo, Starling and Tide on here is you don't need to create several bank accounts. What you can do is have one Starling account or one Monzo account, and you can separate your money. So let's pretend, you know, you've got £1,000 in your Starling account, and you could split that into 5 accounts with £200 in each. But actually it's one account, but it's called a space, I think, in Starling. I use spaces and pots interchangeably. But it's called a space. So if you allocated £200 to each space, when you log into Starling, it says there's nothing in your account. You don't even see it because it's kind of in the background, hidden in these sub accounts or these sub pots. So what I'd encourage people to do, if they want to kind of practice this system with what works in your life, is to, if you haven't already, get a Starling account, a Monzo account, a Tide are the three main ones I seem to come across. And if you've got a bank account you already use, get in the habit of transferring some money to one of these accounts and just create some pots. I'm not even going to tell you what pots to create. I can suggest, you know, one that's quite uniform for a lot of people is maybe some kind of savings and maybe a holiday. But, you know, whatever emotionally connects to you, it might be a big occasion. You know, my wife and I, we're doing our wedding renewal in 2027. So potentially I can have a pot now for 2027. I've not started that, but actually I might start it after this. I might practice what I preach, because you could have a pot for anything. So whatever really resonates with you. I'm going to pick on Beatrice and Nick again because you're in the room. Have you got any questions around this or any ideas that you think you could potentially use this sort of system for?
Well, as I said, I don't do pots. I've read Profit First, but I haven't started implementing it yet. But I do have a Starling and a Monzo account, so I just need to make a start with the suggestions you've made, I think.
Yeah, I mean, yours would be interesting, Beatrice, because I'm talking from the context of a personal finances, but absolutely, obviously, it applies for your business as well. My big advice there would be, I'm not saying you are, but don't overcomplicate it in your mind in terms of, I've got my business, I've got my personal finances. I would, you know, I've heard Mike talk lots of times. I was in a group chat with him last week the author of Profit First.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his big takeaways in the Entrepreneur Circle convention last October in Birmingham, with there was about 1,500 people there, was if you do nothing else, leave this conference, create one pot and just put 1% aside into this little pot. Start mm-hmm. doing that, build a new habit. So I would probably suggest you build, you know, at least one pot in your business. So the typical one, the two I would probably suggest in a business is just something for tax and something for a little bit of extra money for rainy day. That's probably my starting point to keep it simple. And don't worry too much about the percentages. A good starting place, and obviously we can help you, advise you with any numbers within the team. But a good starting point would be, what was my tax last year? You know, and if you can work towards that and divide it by how many times you're going to allocate the money. So if it's weekly, you do it, whatever your tax bill is, divide it by 52. Mm-hmm. You know, so let's pretend someone's got a £5,200 tax bill. That would be 100 quid a week they'd put into their pot. But if that feels like, again, I'm just, for you or anybody else watching this, if these sort of numbers feel like a lot because people are not used to putting that aside, just put anything in that pot would be my suggestion and move towards what it needs to be. So a tax pot and just a profit pot. And the profit pot, I would start with 1% if you're not used to doing this. And the idea is you've got this little bit of extra pocket money every 3 months. You kind of reward yourself and say, that's money I've put aside. You know, I've been disciplined. I can treat myself. And same applies to our personal finances. You know, there's some money I've put aside for 3 months, rainy day fund. I'm going to reward ourselves as a family or as a couple. I'm going to, you know, go on a weekend away. I'm going to buy a nice meal out, whatever that sort of means to you. And that can compound and build. So I'd say one or two pots for your business. For your personal finances, I'd keep it even simpler. It would be whatever resonates with you. If that's a holiday pot, if that's a Christmas pot, if that's starting some savings, you know, don't worry about doing everything. Just keep it simple would be my advice on that.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you. Can I ask another quick question on just the percentages? I know you said not to focus too much on them. Am I right in thinking that what Mike sort of indicates in the book, they're slightly different to what would apply to the UK? Is that right?
Yeah, so the percentages are actually predominantly the same, the actual percentages. The only difference is he's talking in dollars and not pounds. So as long as you could do like quick maths in your head, you know, take away about 20% of the, you know, if it's saying this band is up to 250K, because normally what he says is if you're up to 250K business in dollars, these are your percentages. If you're from 250K to 500K, you've got some different percentages. So as long as you fall in that band, it's kind of the same. So that band would be £200,000-ish sterling instead of $250,000. The only thing I would say, and this is the biggest thing, and for anyone watching this, by the way, and also Nick, this is specific for businesses, what we're talking about now. What we're talking about is for the principle is the same. It's, you know, what percentage am I putting aside for what I need in my life or my business. But for businesses, there's guidelines of what Beatrice suggested, of what we put aside. Those percentages, Beatrice, in the book are probably feel impossible for a lot of people. For a lot of people, they feel very ambitious. The only type of business where they feel achievable at the beginning is if you don't really have much costs. If it's just you selling your time as a service, then they probably feel fine. But for a lot of businesses, they're very ambitious. So, and they're called TAPs, target allocated percentage, you know. So if we talk about our 10% savings for personal finances, keeping on topic, our target allocated percentage would be 10%. And actually, our cap is our current allocated percentage. So if I'm putting 1% aside at the moment, that's my cap, my current allocated percentage. My tap would be what I'm targeting. I'm targeting 10%. So I wouldn't worry about the taps in the book. What we could do is if you reach out to the team and our whoever you normally speak to, is it Candice? Or
yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And And because what we're starting to look to do with people is produce an annual profit MOT where we give you a roadmap for your percentages, and we could do one with you just the first time, just give you a little bit of a direction. So we create custom targets for people that's realistic for your business, really. So I wouldn't worry too much about the numbers in the book is the short answer to that.
Okay, brilliant. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Perfect. Nick, I'm just interested because obviously you're coming at it, I guess, from a more personal finances perspective. Have you got any questions or anything that springs to mind?
No, I don't have any questions. I think it all makes sense. I hadn't heard of the digital apps that you mentioned, so that's interesting. I suppose my only one thought is about investment.
Yeah.
You talk about putting into savings pots. What's your opinion on the investment side of things rather than saving pots?
Good question. Have you been reading my slides? Because we're just coming to that actually.
I'm just teeing you up, Stephen, for your next slides.
So I'll come to that in a second if that's okay. Thank you. So I've covered this already. Start small. I always say start with 1% if you're not used to doing anything. Longer term, possibly work towards 10%. I would definitely read The Richest Man in Babylon because I think it will resonate with you a little bit more. And one of the things in there is the power of compounding. So it's why we pay so much in our mortgage interest, just the power of compounding, which is what, Nick's touching upon in terms of getting bang for buck with our investments, or which I'm going to talk about in a second. That's the next slide, actually. So just to put some, we all get compounding that we're kind of getting interest on our interest, or our assets gone up, so if our, I'll make up some numbers, nice round numbers. If somebody's got a £300,000 property, let's pretend it's gone up by 10%. That would be probably too ambitious, but let's pretend it's gone up by 10% in a year. It would be worth 330K at the end of the year. And if it went up 10% again, you're going to get 10% of 330K. So 33K, not 10% of the original 300K price. So it compounds. So basically you're earning money on the interest and the growth that you're making. And there's some other books I would, The Richest Man in Babylon talks about this, and the terminology it uses is that your money basically works for you. And it sounds a bit weird, but your money creates its own children, and basically they're all multiplying. So, if you invest in something, you get an interest, that they're saying it's multiplying, and you get this multiplying effect, this compounded effect. So I know we could all get our phones out, our calculators, and do some maths. But if you were to put £100 a month aside, that's £1,200 a year for 25 years, that's 30K in terms of the exact amount you're putting aside, in that amount of time. Any quick guesses? I've only got two people in the room. Something that comes to your head, how much do you think that could be worth in 25 years if you had a 10% growth of interest or return on investment in, say, in the stock market? Just some quick numbers.
£150,000.
Okay. Any guess, Beatrice, what would come to your mind? It's just like a natural instinct. 30K. So you physically, put 30K aside.
I was going to say 100.
Okay. So that is really interesting, because if we take your average, we're absolutely spot on. So there was, what's his name? I've got his name now. Darren Brown. So Darren Brown, who does, loads of like tricks of the mind and all that sort of stuff. He done a show once where he had 30 people, and there was what looked like hundreds or thousands of sweets in jars. And he got about 30 people to guess how many sweets were in the jars. And they all took a guess, completely different numbers. He averaged the guesses, and it came to exactly the right amount of sweets in the jar. And there's some weird thing going on when it happens. So for a lot of you two, very well informed, good guesses. For some people that might be shocking, the fact that you've only put 30K aside, and it's worth as much as 125k. Obviously, it depends if it's performing less, if it's performing better. I've used 10% as a round number. The stock market is actually averaged. I've not analyzed it specifically in the last 2 or 3 years, but pre-COVID, and bear in mind, there's all sorts of collapses and stuff that's happened. In a 40-year period, the stock market's averaged about 10 or 11%. The S&P 500 in America is averaged about 11%. So 10% might seem ambitious to some people, but actually, you know, historically, it's not. But that's how powerful, you know, if you put that to everyone and said, we can guarantee you're going to get 125K in the future for 30K, you know, most people would probably take that offer. And that is the power of compounding. That's just 100 quid a month sort of set aside. So, you know, to put some more meat on the bones, you know, I've got to be a bit careful what I say because we're not financial advisors. So we're not allowed to specifically tell you what to go and invest your money in. Interestingly, we do work with financial advisors. We have got someone who can advise on that. Some we do recommend, we've been working with for a few years. However, I would just stress whatever you invest in, make sure that the richest man in Babylon talks about this. Rule number one, protect the asset. So unless you've got this really high appetite for risk, rule number one is you don't lose your money. You know, and that's why people like property, because it's very unlikely the house is going to fall down and it's worth nothing or it's going to half in value. So rule number one is protect the initial investment. And then it's just how safe you want to be. If you read most financial expert books out there when it comes to investing, so there's one by Tony Robbins called Money Mastery, I think it's called. And he studied some of the most successful investors in history. So Warren Buffett, Ray Dalio, some other people. 8 out of 10 financial advisors do not beat the average of the market. So if you went and got a financial expert, 8 out of 10 of those will not beat you simply putting your money in the S&P 500. So the story there is, you know, it doesn't need to be too complicated, too advanced. It's, you know, picking something that's fairly stable or consistent in the bigger picture. Because by and large, the five, you know, I got to be careful with my advice here, but by and large, the 500 biggest companies in America are not going to disappear overnight, and that the aggregation of all of those is generally going to give you a return. I'm not suggesting you should go and spend your money there. It could be the UK FTSE 100. It could be a tracker. You know, if you want professional advice, get professional advice. But my recommendation would be don't just stick it in an account that gets nothing. Don't just stick it in a mattress. Put it in something that can compound and give you a return. You know, typically people are looking at property versus shares. The only thing I will say is a lot of people get scared of shares. We're all in the stock market if we've got a pension. You know, if you've got a pension, you're in the stock market in some form, because you know there will be an element of your pension invested in the stock market there. So that's really, you know, I've been talking for 40 minutes. I just wanted to introduce some of these concepts. You know, my takeaway is to, as Nick touched upon, is to probably get one of these digital banks to supplement your normal banking. So it's really easy to create these pots, play around with your money. Some of them can get a bit fancy in terms of automatically transfer 5% aside. You know, there's these accounts where they can round up your spending. I don't know what it's called, but there's an app where you can round up, you know, if you spend 67p, it'll put 33p in a savings account or a pot for you or invest it. So you can get a bit clever and creative with that. But that's me done. Any sort of final questions from you guys?
No, really good. Well done, Stephen.
Okay, brilliant.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Guys.